Chapter 14. His breathing very hard, and opening his eyes very wide, and nodding his head very much, Mark thanked him for his ride, and without troubling him to stop, jumped lightly down. And away he fluttered, with his red neckerchief, and his open coat, down a cross lane, turning back from time to time to nod to Mr. Pinch, and looking one of the most careless, good-humored comical fellows in life. His late companion, with a thoughtful face, pursued his way to Salisbury. Mr. Pinch had a shrewd notion that Salisbury was a very desperate sort of place, an exceeding wild and dissipated city, and when he had put up the horse, and given the hostler to understand that he would look in again in the course of an hour or two, to see him take his corn, he set forth on a stroll about the streets with a vague, and not unpleasant idea, that they teemed with all kinds of mystery and bedevilment. To one of his quiet habits this little delusion was greatly assisted by the circumstance of its being market day, and the thoroughfares about the marketplace being filled with carts, horses, donkeys, baskets, wagons, garden stuff, meat, tripe, pies, poultry, and hucksters' wares of every opposite description and possible variety of character. Then there were young farmers and old farmers with smock frocks, brown greatcoats, drab greatcoats, red worsted comforters, leather leggings, wonderful shaped hats, hunting whips, and rough sticks, standing about in groups, or talking noisily together on the tavern steps, or paying and receiving huge amounts of greasy wealth, with the assistance of such bulky pocketbooks that, when they were in their pockets it was apoplexy to get them out, and when they were out it was spasms to get them in again. Also there were farmers' wives in beaver bonnets and red cloaks, riding shaggy horses purged of all earthly passions, who went soberly into all manner of places without desiring to know why, and who, if required, would have stood stock still in a china shop, with a complete dinner service at each hoof. Also a great many dogs, who were strongly interested in the state of the market, and the bargains of their masters, and a great confusion of tongues, both brute and human. Mr. Pinch regarded everything exposed for sale with great delight, and was particularly struck by the itinerant cutlery, which he considered of the very keenest kind, insomuch that he purchased a pocket knife with 7 blades in it, and not a cut, as he afterwards found out, among them. When he had exhausted the marketplace, and watched the farmers safe into the market dinner, he went back to look after the horse. Having seen the meat unto his heart's content, he issued forth again, to wander round the town, and regale himself with the shop windows, previously taking a long stare at the bank, and wondering in what direction underground the caverns might be where they kept the money, and turning to look back at one or two young men who passed him, whom he knew to be articled to solicitors in the town, and who had a sort of fearful interest in his eyes, as jolly dogs who knew a thing or two, and kept it up tremendously. But the shops. First of all there were the jeweler's shops, with all the treasures of the earth displayed there, and such large silver watches hanging up in every pane of glass, that if they were anything but first-rate goers it certainly was not because the works could decently complain of want of room. In good sooth they were big enough, and perhaps, as the saying is, ugly enough, to be the most correct of all mechanical performers. In Mr. Pinch's eyes, however, they were smaller than Geneva ware, and when he saw one very bloated watch announced as a repeater, gifted with the uncommon power of striking every quarter of an hour inside the pocket of its happy owner, he almost wished that he were rich enough to buy it. But what were even gold and silver, precious stones and clockwork, to the bookshops, whence a pleasant smell of paper freshly pressed came issuing forth, awakening instant recollections of some new grammar had at school, long time ago, with Master Pinch, Grove House Academy, apostrophe inscribed in faultless writing on the fly leaf. That whiff of Russia leather too, and all those rows on rows of volumes neatly ranged within what happiness did they suggest? and in the window were the spick and span new works from London, with the title pages, and sometimes even the first page of the first chapter, laid wide open, tempting unwary men to begin to read the book, and then, in the impossibility of turning over, to rush blindly in and buy it. Here too were the dainty frontispiece and trim vignette, pointing like handposts on the outskirts of great cities, to the rich stock of incident beyond, and store of books, with many a grave portrait and time-honored name, whose matter he knew well, and would have given minds to have, in any form, upon the narrow shelf beside his bed at Mr. Pecksniff's. What a heartbreaking shop it was! There was another, not quite so bad at first, but still a trying shop, where children's books were sold, and where poor Robinson Crusoe stood alone in his might, with dog and hatchet, goatskin cap and fowling pieces, calmly surveying Philip Quorn and the host of imitators round him, and calling Mr. Pinch to witness that he, of all the crowd, impressed one solitary footprint on the shore of boyish memory, whereof the tread of generations should not stir the lightest grain of sand. And there too were the Persian tales, with flying chests and students of enchanted books shut up for years in caverns. And there too was Abuda, the merchant, with the terrible little old woman hobbling out of the box in his bedroom. And there the mighty talisman, the rare Arabian Nights, with Qasim Baba, divided by four, like the ghost of a dreadful sum, hanging up, all gory, in the robber's cave. Which matchless wonders, coming fast on Mr. Pinch's mind, did so rub up and chafe that wonderful lamp within him, that when he turned his face towards the busy street, a crowd of phantoms waited on his pleasure, and he lived again, with new delight, the happy days before the Pecksniff era. He had less interest now in the chemist's shops, with their great glowing bottles with smaller repositories of brightness in their very stoppers, and in their agreeable compromises between medicine and perfumery, in the shape of toothsome lozenges and virgin honey. Neither had he the least regard, but he never had much, for the tailors, where the newest metropolitan waistcoat patterns were hanging up, which by some strange transformation always looked amazing there, and never appeared at all like the same thing anywhere else. But he stopped to read the playbill at the theater, and surveyed the doorway with a kind of awe, which was not diminished, when a sallow gentleman with long dark hair came out, and told a boy to run home to his lodgings, and bring down his broadsword. Mr. Pinch stood rooted to the spot on hearing this, and might have stood there until dark, but that the old cathedral bell began to ring for vesper service, on which he tore himself away. Now, the organist's assistant was a friend of Mr. Pinch's, which was a good thing, for he too was a very quiet, gentle soul, and had been, like Tom, a kind of old-fashioned boy at school, though well liked by the noisy fellow too. As good luck would have it, Tom always said he had great good luck. The assistant chanced that very afternoon to be on duty by himself, with no one in the moldy organ loft but Tom, so while he played, Tom helped him with the stops, and finally, the service being just over, Tom took the organ himself. It was then turning dark, and the yellow light that streamed in through the ancient windows in the choir was mingled with a murky red. As the grand tones resounded through the church, they seemed, to Tom, to find an echo in the depth of every ancient tomb, no less than in the deep mystery of his own heart. Great thoughts and hopes came crowding on his mind as the rich music rolled upon the air, and yet among them something more grave and solemn in their purpose, but the same were all the images of that day, down to its very lightest recollection of childhood. The feeling that the sounds awakened, in the moment of their existence, seemed to include his whole life and being. And as the surrounding realities of stone and wood and glass grew dimmer in the darkness, these visions grew so much the brighter that Tom might have forgotten the new pupil and the expectant master, and have sat there pouring out his grateful heart till midnight, but for a very earthy old verger insisting on locking up the cathedral forthwith. So he took leave of his friend, with many thanks, groped his way out, as well as he could, into the now lamp-lighted streets, and hurried off to get his dinner. All the farmers being by this time jogging homewards, there was nobody in the sanded parlor of the tavern, where he had left the horse, so he had his little table drawn out close before the fire, and fell to work upon a well-cooked steak and smoking hot potatoes, with a strong appreciation of their excellence, and a very keen sense of enjoyment. Beside him too, there stood a jug of most stupendous Wiltshire beer, and the effect of the whole was so transcendent, that he was obliged every now and then to lay down his knife and fork, rub his hands, and think about it. By the time the cheese and celery came, Mr. Pinch had taken a book out of his pocket, and could afford to trifle with the viands, now eating a little, now drinking a little, now reading a little, and now stopping to wonder what sort of a young man the new pupil would turn out to be. He had passed from this latter theme, and was deep in his book again, when the door opened, and another guest came in, bringing with him such a quantity of cold air, that he positively seemed at first, to put the fire out. "Very hard frost tonight, sir," apostrophe said the newcomer, courteously acknowledging Mr. Pinch's withdrawal of the little table, that he might have place. "Don't disturb yourself, I beg." Apostrophe, though he said this with a vast amount of consideration for Mr. Pinch's comfort, he dragged one of the great leather-bottom chairs to the very center of the hearth, notwithstanding, and sat down in front of the fire, with a foot on each hob. "My feet are quite numbed. Ah! Bitter cold to be sure. Apostrophe, you have been in the air some considerable time, I dare say?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Pinch. "All day. Outside a coach too." Apostrophe, that accounts for his making the room so cool, apostrophe, thought Mr. Pinch. "Poor fellow. How thoroughly chilled he must be." Apostrophe, the stranger became thoughtful likewise, and sat for 5 or 10 minutes looking at the fire in silence. At length he rose and divested himself of his shawl and greatcoat, which, far different from Mr. Pinch's, was a very warm and thick one. But he was not a whit more conversational out of his greatcoat than in it, for he sat down again in the same place and attitude, and leaning back in his chair, began to bite his nails. He was young 21, perhaps, and handsome, with a keen dark eye, and a quickness of look and manner which made Tom sensible of a great contrast in his own bearing, and caused him to feel even more shy than usual. There was a clock in the room, which the stranger often turned to look at. Tom made frequent reference to it also, partly from a nervous sympathy with its taciturn companion, and partly because the new pupil was to inquire for him at 6:30, and the hands were getting on towards that hour. Whenever the stranger caught him looking at this clock, a kind of confusion came upon Tom, as if he had been found out in something, and it was a perception of his uneasiness which caused the younger man to say, perhaps, with a smile, "We both appear to be rather particular about the time. The fact is, I have an engagement to meet a gentleman here." Apostrophe, so have I, apostrophe, said Mr. Pinch. "At 6:30, apostrophe, said the stranger. "At 6:30, apostrophe, said Tom in the very same breath, whereupon the other looked at him with some surprise. "The young gentleman, I expect, apostrophe, remarked Tom, timidly, was to inquire at that time for a person by the name of Pinch." Apostrophe, dear me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the other, jumping up. "And I have been keeping the fire from you all this while. I had no idea you were Mr. Pinch. I am the Mr. Martin for whom you were to inquire. Pray excuse me. How do you do? Oh, do draw near, pray." Apostrophe, thank you, apostrophe, said Tom, thank you. "I am not at all cold, and you are, and we have a cold ride before us. Well, if you wish it, I will. I am very glad, apostrophe said Tom, smiling with an embarrassed frankness peculiarly his, and which was as plainly a confession of his own imperfections, and an appeal to the kindness of the person he addressed, as if he had drawn one up in simple language, and committed it to paper. I am very glad indeed, that you turned out to be the party I expected. I was thinking, but a minute ago, that I could wish him to be like you. Apostrophe, I am very glad to hear it, apostrophe returned Martin, shaking hands with him again. For I assure you, I was thinking there could be no such luck as Mr. Pinch's turning out like you. Apostrophe, no, really. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Tom, with great pleasure. Are you serious? Apostrophe, upon my word I am, apostrophe replied his new acquaintance. You and I will get on excellently well, I know, which it's no small relief to me to feel, for to tell you the truth, I am not at all the sort of fellow who could get on with everybody, and that's the point on which I had the greatest doubts. But they're quite relieved now. Do me the favor to ring the bell, will you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Pinch rose, and complied with great alacrity. The handle hung just over Martin's head, as he warmed himself and listened with a smiling face to what his friend went on to say. It was, if you like punch, you'll allow me to order a glass apiece, as hot as it can be made, that we may usher in our friendship in a becoming manner. To let you into a secret, Mr. Pinch, I never was so much in want of something warm and cheering in my life, but I didn't like to run the chance of being found drinking it, without knowing what kind of person you were, for first impressions, you know, often go a long way, and last a long time. Apostrophe, Mr. Pinch assented, and the punch was ordered. In due course it came, hot and strong. After drinking to each other in the steaming mixture, they became quite confidential. I'm a sort of relation of Pecksniff's, you know, apostrophe said the young man. Indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe cried Mr. Pinch. Yes. My grandfather is his cousin, so he's kith and kin to me, somehow, if you can make that out. I can't. Apostrophe, then Martin is your Christian name? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Pinch, thoughtfully. Oh, apostrophe, apostrophe, of course it is, apostrophe returned his friend. I wish it was my surname, for my own is not a very pretty one, and it takes a long time to sign Chuzzlewit as my name. Apostrophe, dear me. Apostrophe, apostrophe cried Mr. Pinch, with an involuntary start. You're not surprised at my having two names, I suppose? Apostrophe, apostrophe returned the other, setting his glass to his lips. Most people have. Apostrophe, oh, no, apostrophe said Mr. Pinch, not at all. Oh dear no. Well, apostrophe and then remembering that Mr. Pecksniff had privately cautioned him to say nothing in reference to the old gentleman of the same name who had lodged at the Dragon, but to reserve all mention of that person for him, he had no better means of hiding his confusion than by raising his own glass to his mouth. They looked at each other out of their respective tumblers for a few seconds, and then put them down empty. I told them in the stable to be ready for us 10 minutes ago, apostrophe said Mr. Pinch, glancing at the clock again. Shall we go? Apostrophe, if you please, apostrophe returned the other. Would you like to drive? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Pinch, his whole face beaming with a consciousness of the splendor of his offer. You shall, if you wish. Apostrophe, why, that depends, Mr. Pinch, apostrophe said Martin, laughing, upon what sort of a horse you have. Because if he's a bad one, I would rather keep my hands warm by holding them comfortably in my greatcoat pockets. Apostrophe, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.